There we go. Okay, so just so everyone knows, I'm recording everybody. As Brian will tell you, I'm want to do. So that's so that any students who can join us have an opportunity to benefit from the meeting, as well as anyone who wants to review something that we talked about, can do so at their leisure. So, welcome everybody to the second meeting of the Applied Child Lab. We are going to be beginning our training today on the SCoRS Q. That's the Social Cognition and Object Relations Scale. Q-sort version, but we are actually going to be learning initially the non-Q-sort version, which is known as the SCoRS G. G stands for global. So I think once we master the SCoRS G, I think it'll be a quick, I'm hoping it'll be a quick learn to transition over to the SCoRS Q, because by the time we're done training, which will put us around Thanksgiving, everybody in the first year class, the four or five, I guess the four of you who are in the first year class, as well as Teresa and Elisa, although I don't see Elisa today, but everybody who has not been familiar with Q sorting, I should change that. Everybody in the first year class who's not familiar with Q sorting will become familiar with Q sorting by Thanksgiving because of the class that you're taking with me. Elisa has already at least been acquainted with Q sorting because she was a member of the lab last spring. That leaves Teresa, who I'll have to work with individually, or Brian, you can work with her individually to bring her up to speed on just Q sorting in general and how Trello works. She has a Trello board. Taylor created that for her as well as everybody else. Taylor's out today, but she made those boards. So everyone has a board who's on the call today. So I thought rather than trying to waste an extra lab teaching everybody about Q sorting, I would instead focus on the training of the coding system. And then by the time we're done with that, most of you anyway will be at least acquainted with Q sort methodology in general and how to Q sort and so forth. There's Elisa. I was just talking about you. Here you are. I wonder if I talk about anybody, they just appear. Let me see. Abraham Lincoln. Nope, doesn't work. Anyway, as I was saying, Elisa, that you're familiar. Thanks. Translation corny. Elisa, what I was saying is that you already have some acquaintance with Q sort methodology from attending my lab last spring, so you're good. You're good to go. And almost everybody in the lab will have had some exposure to Q sorting by the time we're ready to transition over to the SCoRS Q. So.
My phone.
What's
I
that?
didn't. So you said I'm good to go?
You're good to go as far as knowing about Q sort methodology. I mean, you attended.
Oh,
You
okay.
yeah, you attended the lab last spring, and so you're familiar with what Q sorting is anyway, because of your exposure to it in lab last spring. That's what I was saying.
Right. Okay. Sorry about
Yeah,
that.
no problem, no problem. So, in some senses, you're ahead of the game because the first year research assistants don't know anything about QSORT methodology. I mean, they're getting their first exposure actually this week. And I've already received several first QSORTs from that first year class. But not everybody has even done their first one yet. So that's what I was saying, that you're a little bit ahead of the game. All right. So I have asked Brian to help me out in the training, and he will obviously do that because he's a very good speaker and he understands the system, because Brian and I were trained by the two people who had probably most to do with the most recent version of this coding system. And their names are Michelle Stein and Janelle Slavin Mulford. Earlier this summer, Brian and I attended a three-hour workshop, learning this system. And then I spent the rest of the summer trying to master it by reading the book and, you know, doing all of that. So Brian and I are actually formally trained, and we're going to try to in turn train all of you with the goal of coding transcribed child psychotherapy sessions, coding the child for their quality of object relations and social cognition using this instrument. So I hope everybody received the two chapters that I emailed yesterday, and I had asked everybody to read the COM chapter for today's meeting. I hope everybody's done that, so that there will be questions. Next week we'll do the AFF chapter, and I'll be emailing one chapter a week, which comes from a book that these two authors wrote and I purchased this summer. You want to add anything at this point, Brian?
No, I think get started then.
Okay. So these chapters are very short. I don't want to tax you too much with the reading part, but what I'm giving you should be enough to understand how to do the coding. So this code, let me just make a few brief remarks, and then we can get into specifically the complexity of representations of people. The scores G and scores Q consist of 8 different dimensions of quality of object relations. And object relations are basically the quality of interactions between the self and the other. But these are not like physical interactions. These are representations of these interactions in real life. So they can include fantasies. They can include memories, and they're all kind of mixed up together in one's mind. And the goal of this coding system is to assess the quality of these object relations in these 8 different facets of object relations. And the first one we're going to be studying for today is the complexity of representations of people, which is probably the one that is the most important, I would think, of all 8, because it's most related to the actual title of the coding system, right? Of course, there is another dimension called social causality, and that one's very closely related to social cognition, which is also part of the title of the coding system. But I think this one represents what most people think about, most writers in the field and researchers in the field think of when they think of object relations and assessment of object relations and the quality of object relations. I think this is what people most often think about, this particular dimension. But in reality, Drew Weston, who first created the coding system, had in mind a very broad assessment of object relations based on these 8 different facets of object relations. And we're going to be studying all 8. I'm going to take 1 week per facet or dimension, and we're going to focus on that dimension, and then we're going to try to put it all together later in the, early December. And by the time, we're done, with the semester, you'll be trained, hopefully, and then you have a whole month layoff before we actually start coding real data, which is the unfortunate part, but I don't see any other way around it. We get a late start to the semester, and so that's just life. But we'll do our best to take one dimension at a time as we go this semester. I don't want to overburden anybody, but so the first dimension that we're going to be reading, that you've read about presumably for today, is complexity of representations of people. And this dimension is rated, as all of them are, on a scale from 1 to 7. And if you look at the bottom of your, and I realized this right before I came on the meeting, that the way that I scanned these chapters, they're at a 90 degree angle to the ability to read them. So in order to read them, you have to really print them out. And I hope everybody has a printer, had a printer to be able to do that. But so me sharing my screen isn't really going to be very helpful. But I do have the book here, and
I can share my screen. I rotated it.
Oh, you did? Okay. I tried to figure out how to do that, and of course, being of a certain age, I was not able to.
You just had to open in a new window, and then you're able to rotate it.
Okay. Note to self: open a new window. But Brian, you have the ability to share a screen, or do I have to give you co-hosting privileges?
Looks like I'm good.
Oh, there we go. All right. So, thank you, Brian. You guys succeeded where I failed. So the idea of this dimension is to assess the degree to which a person's mental representations of themselves and others are sufficiently differentiated from each other, so they're distinct, so you can tell one person from another. You can also tell oneself from another. And this differentiation or distinction is really important. And what the research suggests is that individuals who are better able to differentiate themselves from others and one person from another have better psychological outcomes. So they tend to be healthier. They tend to be more adaptive to their environments. They tend to have more harmonious relationships with others. So there's a lot of tangible benefits. Emotional well-being is higher. There are a lot of tangential benefits to having a higher score on COM. I'm just going to call it COM, but it means complexity of representations of people. When I mean representations, I mean mental representations, the images that you have up here in your brain. That's what this instrument is assessing, the quality of those images in your mind about oneself and other people in relation to each other. What else do I want to say about that? So that's basically the idea behind the coding system. And the coding system can be applied to a number of different types of data. So the coding system is not data itself. It's a way of interpreting or assessing data. The examples in the book and the ones that we're going to be reading as we move along on this training can come from a variety of data sources. The most prominent data source that's used in the book are TAT vignettes. What are TATs? TATs are thematic is a test in clinical psychology that stands for thematic apperception test, TAT. And it's a series of cards with somewhat ambiguous drawings on them. And you ask the patient or the subject of the study, I'm reading my chat. There was a chat came in.
Yeah, hopefully next semester I'll be be able to teach everyone PAT. So.
Yeah. Okay. Yes to Rachel, of course. I appreciate your attending, even though it's Yom Kippur. Anyway, so you'll learn how to administer the TAT as a second year doctoral student, right, Brian? Or is it even earlier you'd learn it?
No, it's still second year.
Second year, okay. Class. Yeah. So they're called stimuli, but it's really these ambiguous drawings. You ask the patient or the participant, if it's a research study, to make up a story about the picture or the drawing, a story with a beginning, a middle, and an end, and you ask them to tell you what all the characters in the story are thinking and feeling. At least that's how I learned how to administer it. Brian, you might have learned a slightly different set of instructions, but that's how I learned it in grad school. And so then you either audio record or you furiously write down the responses that you get. And so this coding system, the scores, is most commonly used with the TAT. But there are other data sources that you could then use. For example, the early memories test. So you ask the patient or participant to share what their earliest memories are in their lives. So what's your earliest memory? And then you record the answer. And then you can use that data, those data, and score them or interpret them using the scores. What we're doing is, and the examples of this kind of data are much less frequent in the book, but you definitely can and use this coding system. And this coding system has been applied to psychotherapy narratives. The examples are less frequent in the book, but they do exist. And so you get a psychotherapy transcript. So that's a session between a therapist and a patient. You record it, you transcribe it, and then you apply this coding system to the 45-minute session. And you'd rate the patient in the session along these eight dimensions that you're going to be learning. And that's how we're going to be using it. So each of the eight dimensions has seven anchor points. And if you look at the very first page that I sent to you at the very bottom, thank you, Brian. No. Go back. Right there. Up a little bit. Too much. I'm looking at the anchor points. There we go. So at the bottom of the first page, you'll see the actual anchor points. And in the book that I bought, the anchor points are printed at the bottom of every page, but because of how the pages are laid out, I had to cut off the anchor points at the bottom of every other page, but because the first page starts lower on the page, I was able to photocopy the anchor points on the very first page. So at least you have the anchor points on the first page, if not on every page. So if we look at the bottom of the first page, Brian has it pulled up here, complexity of representation of people. That's the name of the dimension that we're going to be learning. And there are seven anchor points, 1 to 7, one being the worst possible lowest quality complexity, and 7 being the highest quality complexity, the most psychologically minded answer you could think of. 1 is egocentric, or sometimes confuses thoughts, feelings, or attributes of the self and others. And then 2 is a midpoint rating that is between 1 and 3. They only put odd numbered anchor points here. And so the even numbered ones are between the odd numbered ones. 3 is tends to describe people's personalities and internal states in minimal. Can you move it over a little bit, Brian? In minimally, thank you. And then, yeah, minimally elaborated, relatively simplistic ways, or splits representations into good and bad. If you know anything about psychopathology, this idea of splitting into good, all good and all bad should ring a bell for you. It's very reminiscent of someone with borderline personality disorder. They often do that. Anchor point five, representations of the self and others are stereotypical or conventional, able to integrate both good and bad characteristics of self and others, has awareness of impact on others. So there's a lot going on there. And then seven, psychologically minded, insight into self and others, differentiated and shows considerable complexity. That's the highest possible score. Both one and seven are going to be the rarest anchor points that you're going to be using. They shouldn't happen very often. The book does provide examples, though, of one in seven, even though they're relatively rare, and we will review those tonight. It's more likely that you're going to see threes, fours, and fives. Twos and sixes are going to be a little bit more common, but still a little bit rare. But the threes, fours, and fives are what you're mostly going to be seeing. Any questions about that so far? So in subsequent dimensions, for example, next week we're going to talk about affective quality of representations, which is totally different. Yes. And it's Andy, right?
Yeah, it's Andy. Sorry, I was raising my tangible hand, but I don't know if maybe people can't see it because of the screen.
Yeah, I can't see it because Brian is using the screen to share.
Okay. Well, just before we get like deeper into this, and I'm sorry if this is like a super unintelligent question.
No unintelligent questions.
But just because I don't know anything about like psychoanalytic assessments, how can you make sure that this is an accurate way to assess someone? Because what if you show them an image in their mind, they develop a very elaborate statement, but they don't project that verbally? I don't know. You know what I'm saying? What if someone actually has a very deep insight and can come up with all these thoughts and feelings of each character, but then what they tell the therapist doesn't reflect that?
Right. So that would be an outlier, I would think. So if you're conducting a study with 100 participants, you might have a few who would defy the trend, right? And so they might be very psychologically minded, very self-aware, have very clearly differentiated images of self and other in their mind, but they have difficulties articulating that. That wouldn't be the norm, but that is, I'm not going to deny that that's a possibility, but the larger your sample size, the more those outliers are going to be drowned out by the majority. And I chose not to photocopy the chapters that show the empirical literature to support this coding system, but you can read that on your own, or you can just trust me. There is a lot of empirical support for this coding system. I will say, however, that it's never been applied to child psychotherapy sessions before. So this is what makes our application new to the field. It's never been done before, but it's been used mostly with adults, but it has been used with some child samples, just not child psychotherapy samples. But it does have a pretty substantial evidential base associated with it. But that's a valid question, and my answer is yeah, that there are people who are going to defy the trend or the pattern of, you know, not being able to express what is in their minds. Any other questions at this point? Okay, so when we study the other seven dimensions, this little box that you see here that Brian has pulled up, the box will be very similar in each circumstance for each dimension. It's going to be scale from 1 to 7, just like this one here, except the anchor points are going to be defined differently according to the actual dimension that's being assessed. So today we're studying complexity of representation of people. Next week, we're going to be studying affective quality of representations, AFF. So the definitions of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7 are going to be slightly different, but the pattern is the same. It's going to be a scale from 1 to 7, and all 8 dimensions have the same pattern. So if you multiply 8 times 7, you're actually, if you were coding some data, let's say a TAT story, you would be you'd be giving 8 different ratings, but you'd have to be you have to consider 56 different possibilities, 8 times 7. So there are 56 different possibilities when rating a data source, but you're only going to be providing 8 ratings, 1 for each dimension. Does that make sense? Everybody with me? Okay. So just some highlights of this particular dimension, the first one, calm. Just wanted people to realize that it has to do with both differentiation of different images. So person A and person B, or between the self and person A, or the self and person B. And so differentiation is important, but also complexity is important. How complex is the description? How full and comprehensive is it of each of the characters, right? So that's also important to consider when assigning a value to the data source, all right? And keep in mind that we're really focusing on people's thoughts and motivations. I mean, the book uses the term urges, which is fine. I like motivation better, but it's thoughts and motivations, not affects. When I say affects, I mean emotions. Why? Because we're going to be studying the coding of affects next week. So affective quality of representations is what we're studying next week. So affects are kind of left out, they're omitted when we're considering a rating using this particular scale or dimension, but we are focusing on thoughts, or if you like the word cognitions, you can use that term, and then motivations or urges as well. So why do people do what they do? How spelled out, how articulated is that in the story that you're reading? And in our case, when we get there, how articulated is it in the psychotherapy transcript? So one of the differences between what we're going to be learning here and what we're actually going to be doing in real life when we actually code a transcript is that the transcript is going to be considerably longer than these vignettes that that we're going to be reading. And that's a good and a bad thing. It's a good thing because you're going to have more data to rely on to make the rating. So it's going to be, in some one sense, easier because you're going to have more information. It's going to be harder in the sense that you're going to have more information. So you have to take into account more there than just the little brief vignettes that we're going to be reading today. So any questions about that? So I think it's probably going to be most helpful if we just go into some of the examples. So Brian has pulled up here an example of, keep where it was. There we go. Thanks. An example of a 1. How would you rate a 1, which is the absolute lowest rating you can give? So here's this example or vignette comes from an early memory narrative. So you ask the patient or the participant in the research study, tell me your earliest memory, and then you record what they say. So I remember I went to the playground with my sister and my mom. I was about 5 or 6. I can't remember the specific age. We were playing on the swings nearby my grandparents' house, and one of us got stung by a bee. Can't remember if it was me or her. Okay, right there. Boom. Can't remember if it was me or her. Wouldn't you remember if you were stung by a bee? She can't remember where this. So there's a fusion of identities here. Is it me? Is it her? There's no differentiation here. I remember we were both crying. It felt like it was happening to me, but I'm not entirely sure. It was happening to one of us, but it felt like both of us. Either way, it scared me, and I'm scared of bees to this day. I wish I could remember if it were me or her. So there's confusion there. This is an example where three people are identified in the narrative, but the siblings' experience is fused. That is, the narrator is unable to distinguish whether this experience happened to her or her sister. There is little complexity or differentiation between people. The siblings' experience and feelings are merged. For these reasons, it is coded as a one. Do people get a sense of that? Why it's a one?
I have a question.
Yes, Elisa.
From what I read, if I'm reading it correctly, it said that a one would also be like no like thoughts or feelings really. So she does mention the feelings, but because they're confused, does that like trump it? Is that what it, that why it's a one?
Exactly.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah. No, excellent question. Excellent question. You have to have that confusion between individuals for the one. But, you know, there is another way to get a one. And Brian, if you could just scroll up a little bit.
I keep on screen sharing when I want to unmute. The one thing I just want to comment about that,
yeah,
is in the longer transcripts, if they're like, oh, I can't remember if I did it, I wouldn't automatically make it a one if it was just one instance of, like, confusion. For these transcripts, I think they need to be really confused throughout about what happened to who.
Exactly. Stay right there. Brian's right, because in a transcript, you have a larger, you know, what's the word, verbal sample of the patient. And, you know, one little example of confusion doesn't make it a one. You have to balance the preponderance of evidence. It's the preponderance of evidence that produces a rating, not just one example. So a confusion at minute 23 of a 45-minute session isn't going to automatically turn that transcript into a one on this dimension. Now, if you have enough, if you have a preponderance of confusion, then you would consider a one for the rating for a psychotherapy transcript. But you'd have to have a number of examples of that. You can't just rated a one because of one example. You know, one swallow doesn't make a summer. So here's an early memory narrative. A very egocentric worldview also counts. I always thought that the way to be beautiful was to be skinny. I got into an argument with my boyfriend about it because he was always telling me it's possible to be beautiful but be a size 8. So to end the dispute, I pulled out the dictionary and looked up the word beautiful. To my shock, the dictionary said nothing about being thin. When my boyfriend said that proved his point, I dragged him to the library and made us reference about 10 different dictionaries because I knew I was right. I still don't believe it to this day and think the dictionary got it wrong. Well, here's somebody who's so rigid in their thinking, they can't accept any other point of view. I can think of a political party who's kind of stuck in their own rigid beliefs right now, but I won't cast aspersions. So in this example, the narrator is unable to see another point of view. Despite a plethora of evidence, she's stuck in her own point of view about what it means to be beautiful. For these reasons, this is coded as a one. And by the way, I have no idea why this would be an early memory, but that's beside the point. I just noticed that. So, and then scroll up, Brian, please. Thanks. And then another possibility for one is an incomplete sentence with no internal states. So here's a TAT narrative, and this is associated with one of the pictures. I won't go into I know what the picture is because I can see it in my mind, but I won't, won't waste our time. Breasts, exposure, nudity. Now, what in the world does that tell you about complexity of representations of people? It tells you extremely little to none, which is why it would get a one. This example is not a full sentence, no internal states. What's an internal state? That would mean like a motivation, an urge, some kind of sense of intentionality. There's nothing there. For these reasons, this is coded as a one. Then we go to what would a two look like? So there are different examples that are given, less than one sentence, but contains an internal state. So here's the response to one of the TAT cards or pictures. Hopeless, despair, and agitation. All right, so these are, these are internal state words, but there's so little there. This is an example where internal states are present, in this case, feelings. However, it does not comprise a full sentence. As such, calm would be scored a two, and SC is that social causality will be described in a later chapter, will be rated as a one. There's absolutely no social causality here. We'll talk about that at some other point. So scroll up, Brian. Okay. So another example of a two with a little bit more verbiage anyway. The power has gone out of the house. A man opened the window to get fresh air and light the room. He's waiting for the power to come back on. Thinking, how long it will take for the power to come back on. Feeling, just waiting for the power to come back on. And power comes back on. You hear the concrete nature of this narrative? It's extremely concrete. There's no real window, pardon the pun, there's no window into this person's, the inner workings of this person's mind. So this is an example of an extremely concrete narrative. Internal states are not mentioned. You don't hear any intentionality or anything in the character, even when the verbal prompting is provided. So this particular administration included a administrator who said, what are the characters thinking? What are they feeling? And in spite of those prompts, nada, nothing going on there. So there's no description of his personality. For these reasons, code is a two. All right. There is at least a description. And we don't see any merging or fusion of characters, but at the same time, it's so incredibly concrete that we would give it a two. So then, is this helpful? Are people learning this through this kind of didactic going through the examples, or is this not helpful for people? Anybody?
I forget that you can't see us. This it is helpful, but I don't know if other people did, like, later on in the article, in the chapter, there's where you have to rate it yourself. Like, maybe if we could go through, this is helpful, but hopefully we've like read this already, but I don't know if we go through the one at the bottom together, because it doesn't show what rating it is. And if we rated it ourselves when we read it, that would be, then we could like dissect it together.
Right. So, I hear exactly what you're saying. And I was going to wait till later to bring this up, but I can bring it up now. So in the back of each of these chapters, there are examples of, vignettes, sources of data that don't have the coding directly associated with it. And actually, I put a piece of paper underneath the answers with the explanations so that you all didn't see it. And what I want you to do for next week is to come back with your ratings. And then we'll discuss. But I just wanted to people to understand the rating before you, I give you that assignment. So what I want people to do, I might as well tell you now. I want people to do these ratings and then send me your responses in an Excel spreadsheet. So the, let me turn to page 45, where it says practice example narratives. There are 10 examples. Sorry, Brian. Yeah, right there, page 45. There are 10 examples. What I'd like you to do is rate each of them for calm, and then send me your responses by Wednesday night, 10 p.m., in anticipation of our Thursday meeting. That includes the people who are listening to the podcast. Send it to me Wednesday night by 10. So you read the 10 vignettes one at a time, and then just assign a rating. And hopefully, you don't have to send me this, but write down your rationale so that when we meet next week, we can actually talk through people's rationales, and I'll then reveal the right answers. How's that? And I'll also correlate everybody's responses with the gold standard, as my experienced research assistants know that I do.
Is it Pollock?
It's actually the authors of the book, Stein and Slave and Mulford. But Pollock probably gave them the answers. That's what I'm guessing. I think they consulted with Pollock beforehand, before they even wrote the book. So you'll send that, and what you'll do is you'll open up an Excel spreadsheet and just put your answers in the first column, and each row will represent the number of the vignette. So there, you'll have answers in the 10 rows, but one column. Does that make sense for everybody? So row one, column one, you'll have the answer to vignette one. Row two, column one, will be the answer to vignette two. Row three, column one, will be the answer to vignette four, etc. for all 10. And it shouldn't take that long. I mean, those of you who are formal research assistants, you know, you owe me 6 hours a week, and this isn't going to be anywhere near that, not even close. So you get a free ride, almost a free ride, for the first 8 weeks.
Just be happy you don't have to read German Google Translated therapy.
But Brian's not bitter.
No, Brian, you're triggering me right now. You're triggering me.
But Brian's reliabilities are stellar on those Google translated German transcripts.
I still don't know how, but that is besides the point.
Okay. So getting back to, I think we're at rating three. Yes, so TAT narrative. The man just got up out of bed. He killed his wife and he feels bad about it. He choked her because she was unfaithful to him, and now he wants to kill himself before the police find out. The police catch him before he does, and he goes to jail for life, thinking how he could have done what he just did. Now, we get no, very little information about motivation other than, I'm assuming he felt hurt and rejected that she cheated on him. We get an inkling of that, but there's very little elaboration, right? There's so little there. So in this example, internal states are mentioned, right? So he feels bad about it, but they're minimal and simplistic. Internal states include he feels bad about it, and once is a intentionality word. It's a motivational word, wants to kill himself. We have more of a description of his behavior than his thoughts and or understanding of himself and others. You know, we hear about his behavior, but we don't hear much about what are his internal thoughts about this? That is, he killed his wife because she was unfaithful and he lost self-control. There's little complexity surrounding both characters. I mean, we know virtually nothing about the wife, right? Other than she was unfaithful. For these reasons, this is given a rating of 3. All right. Scroll. Thank you.
I also do just want to say, because it said in here that splitting. So if someone is like thinking very highly of someone and then highly negative of someone, like, oh, I love this person, they're great, and then like 2 seconds later they're like, I hate them, they're the worst. Where there isn't a, you know, there's a, again, splitting is the word that you will learn in this program, but kind of two views of people within the same person, that also falls under a 3. And I'm a little surprised that it give any examples of that. So if they go like back and forth of extremes, again, there's some variability in it, but if it goes from like, I love them, to I hate them, and back and forth, that would also count as a 3 for these purposes.
Excellent point, Brian. That's why Brian is the lab coordinator.
Just a follow-up question.
Yes.
Is that only talking about like people and like subjects, or is that talking about just like everything? If it's always like a back and forth between like things that they enjoy, or I don't know, does that also count as like a 3?
Well, it has to do with characters. So,
okay, so character. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Or oneself. Now, later we're going to be rating complexity of representations of or of values and standards, which is different. But this one specifically involves people, complexity of representations of people. So we're focusing only on people in this particular dimension that we're learning. So then an example of a rating of 4, some man sitting with his girlfriend, and the girl is asking him if he loves her, and he turns away because he can't look at her face because he doesn't love her. It turns out that this guy is in love with somebody else, and he ends up breaking up with her because he wants to go with the other one. The girl is distraught when this happens, and she tries to kill herself. The guy is feeling guilty. He thinks he feels bad because he doesn't feel the same way she feels about him. So that's fairly, I mean, it's getting there, right? He didn't love her as much as she loves him, and he ended up meeting another girl, and he's falling in love with her. Okay, so there are varying levels of complexity in this man in this narrative, which can increase scoring difficulty. So if you have, and especially in psychotherapy transcripts, you're going to have a lot to weigh, to consider. So in one area of the transcript, at minute from minutes 5 to 15, maybe the person is exploring and conveying a very complex sense of relationships, right? And then maybe minutes 30 to 45, it's a lot less complex and a lot less differentiated. And then you have to weigh, okay, well, the description earlier in the psychotherapy transcript doesn't really match the one at the end. And then you have to arrive at a compromise rating in that situation. Let's say the first part of the psychotherapy transcript would be rated, let's say, a 4, and the second part is really a 2. So then you might want to consider a 3 as the final rating for that psychotherapy transcript. Of all the reading I've done, I've consulted Stein and Slavin Mulford and talked to other people. It's best that we rate, we provide 8 ratings for each transcript. I originally thought maybe I'd break up each transcript into 2. So you have the minutes 1 to 22 or 23, and then minutes 22 or 23 to 45, and people advised me against that. So we're going to rate the entire session, which, as I said earlier, makes it both easier and more difficult, I think, to do the rating. So there are varying levels of complexity in this narrative, which can increase scoring difficulty. That is, the boyfriend is demonstrating some complexity. He loves another woman. He feels guilty and bad because he doesn't feel the same way toward her. Okay, fine. He's aware of the impact he's having on her. That's important. That would move it up to a 5 if he's aware of the impact, which he is. However, she has a simplistic understanding of the interaction. She doesn't have much complexity. She becomes consumed by feelings. No thoughts mentioned. So the girl or woman is very one-dimensional, is basically what we're saying here. It's a very one-dimensional description of the woman. The man is much more complex. She doesn't have much complexity. She becomes consumed by feelings, no thoughts mentioned, and acts on these feelings by trying to take her life. Her calm, yes, she's basic. Her calm would be lower, 2 or 3. As such, the overall calm would be 4. So they kind of, the author's average. So let's say she gets a 3. He gets a 5. So 3 plus 5 is 8 divided by 2 is 4. So that'd be the compromise score, would be a 4. People understanding this, getting the hang of it?
I just have a quick question.
Yes, Lexi.
So I know. So you said that we're going to be using transcripts from between a child and a therapist, right?
Right.
So obviously, I have to assume that the child's complexity won't be as high as, say, an adult. So are we taking that into consideration, or is that why you said most of the scores will probably be like 3, 4, and 5?
Yeah. So let me answer. There's kind of a 2-part question. A, we're not going to be coding the therapist. So that we're only coding the child's enunciations, and the child, for the reasons you just specified accurately, will not have as complex object relations as an adult, unless the kid is some freak of nature. And so we're going to look at I would be shocked, absolutely shocked, if this child got a score of 7 or even a 6 in any of the sessions. So already we're really looking at a scale from 1 to 5, right? But I do want you to be able to master all 7 anchor points of each of the, because let's say we want to, at some point, you know, we want to consider rating adult psychotherapy sessions, for example. I mean, you'd have the ability to do that because you have the upper limits mastered as well. So it's important to master all 7 anchor points, even though we're most likely, just to being honest with you, I think we're going to be using 1 to 5 almost exclusively, if not exclusively.
Okay, thank you.
All right, yeah, sure. We've got about 20 minutes left. I think we're doing okay. So here's an example of a 5. And you might notice this just observationally, that the actual vignettes are getting longer. And so this brings us back to Andy's point about the relationship between the amount of verbiage and the ratings. I think it is true. And there's some research to suggest that longer responses tend to get higher ratings, and that calls into question the possibility that that a higher rating isn't only the outcome of higher quality object relations, but it might also mean higher verbal IQ. So a confounding variable might be verbal IQ, and I think there is one study that I read about that confirmed that idea, that verbal IQ does is a predictor of quality of object relations using the scores. So if you really wanted to find out whether object relations is related to, let's say, psychotherapy outcome, it'd be best to control for the person's verbal IQ. We don't have a verbal IQ score on the kid that we're going to be coding, so we can't do that. But just something to keep in mind. So as you can see, the vignette is getting a little longer here. So code of 5. They don't look real, so it's hard to put myself inside of it. Dwayne likes Miriam, but he doesn't think that it's manly to pay attention to her. He pulls away from her embrace. She was interpreting that he wanted her to keep paying attention to him. She doesn't. He's thinking, I totally expect her to be all clingy. Now I wonder what she's about feeling. In the moment of the picture, irritated, she thinking. Irritated that he's pulling away, but in a more wistful way. She's showing, I'm not interested in you, thinking. If you're not interested in me, I'm not interested in you. Underneath, she's a bit rejected. So here we have layers of personality, right? So she can show one thing, but she's feeling something underneath that. So we're seeing here a complexity that we haven't seen in previous vignettes. There's a complexity of this person's personality. There are layers, right? You can show one thing, but feel something different. So she's acting indifferent, but underneath she's feeling rejected. So already she's a three-dimensional character. Underneath she's a bit rejected, less secure, knows how to handle it. She's not playing games, and she decides he's shallow. She decides she's more interested in spending time with a guy who's really interested in being around her. He never gets to connect because he gets too restless. Interpersonally, he's always looking for the next best thing. So in this narrative, internal states and descriptions of people's personalities are addressed. There is some complexity and depth of understanding. That is, the male character describes his understanding of himself in the context of this situation. Likewise, the female character is able to describe her understanding of herself in the context of the other. Both characters are trying to understand each other's points of view. However, this falls short. This would be rated as a 6 or 7 if there were more nuanced, that means complex, understanding of each character. More specifically, this would be rated as a 6 if one of the characters were able to get more of a sense of the other character, and a 7 if this applied for both characters. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think as you go up, it's really just more and more complex. So it gets a little weird, especially towards the higher ones, of like how complex is this thought or understanding of, you know, the characters. But if you just don't beat yourselves up over it, because I know that this is always a problem when we're teaching the, whatever we're coding system. Go with your gut for how complex you think it is and all the other variables and what it is, because it does start to get a little blurry towards the top.
Sounds good. All right. So number 6. This one's pretty creepy. There's a boy, young adult boy, sleeping, and he's about to face an attempt of molestation by a male friend of the family. Now here, this is a pretty graphic and disturbing content. Keep in mind, we're not rating content. We're looking at the structure, the complexity of the response. We're not rating content. So the content can be really freaky, disturbing, upsetting, and that might reflect psychopathology. It may not, but that's not what we're looking at. We are looking exclusively at the complexity of the response, the structural complexity. All right, just want to keep that in mind. So this is a rating of 6, but the content is extremely disturbing. He's about to face an attempt of molestation by a male friend of the family. This guy has previously been a little huggy, touchy-feely, but has not made any overt sexual moves until this moment. This kid is 14. He wakes up quick, pushes the guy off, saying, "What's this guy doing?" He knows what he's doing. He has the self-confidence to not take this abuse, and he very quickly assumed the dominant role in the scene. He actually feels pity for the older guy. He tells the guy he needs help and leaves. There's nobody else around, so he's left to think by himself whether he should tell his family or police because he's seen. When he pushed the guy away, he could see that the guy was more pathetic than threatening, and even at 14, he's mature enough. Now, you see a really clear sense of how age and development determines one's level of maturity. So there's an awareness of his age and how that might impact his ability to respond to this situation. That's very nuanced. At 14, he's mature enough, a dilemma for him to either tell someone or let it go because he's a friend of the family. And he's no longer afraid for himself. He's not afraid of the guy, but because he suspects he will do it again on someone else, or suspects he may have already, he does tell his parents. He tells them that he doesn't want to get the guy in trouble, but get him help. I can't decide what the parents do. So in this example, the 14-year-old boy demonstrates considerable complexity as he describes this interaction. He describes his thoughts, feelings, and urges or motivations about attempted abuse in a differentiated way. That is, he's able to separate his own thoughts and feelings about himself from the perpetrator. So it's very clear who's who. He's able to think about how this not only impacts himself, but also speculates about the perpetrator's past and future actions, as well as other potential victims. A lot of foresight going on here, a lot of psychological mindedness. He's able to wrestle with the idea that he's a family friend and the additional concerns this brings. So if I tell, you know, what's this going to do to the older guy? How's it going to affect the family dynamic? All this is really showing a lot of complexity. He's able to wrestle with the idea that he's a family friend, the additional concerns this brings. This is given a rating of 6 and not 7 because he doesn't talk about how the perpetrator might be experiencing the interaction and or how the parents understand the situation. So you need more than just a very nuanced, complex description of one character. You need multiple characters having the same kind of very complex understanding. And in this example, we get only one character with that kind of level of understanding. But if this narrator had given the same time and energy to describing the perpetrator's motivations and thoughts or the parents, it would have bumped up to a 7. And then finally, scroll up. Thank you. A 7. This would be like the ultimate, right? You'll hardly ever see this, but this is an early memory. In the summer, because I was born right by the seacoast, my father would take us to the beach in the morning. So we'd come back and my mom would have cooked something and we'd all have lunch, then go out for a walk in the weekends. I can remember my mother and father fighting and her crying, but I realized something was wrong. I think I was scared because this was the first time I heard them fighting. So now we're getting a picture into his own mind, right? As I got older, they fought on a regular basis, especially when my father started his job as a shipmaster on the boat. My dad would typically start the fight with my mom. It was the only way I think he knew how to let out steam. So now we're getting a sense of his mind, the father's mind, okay? My mom wouldn't know what to do with his anger. She would try to avoid, ignore him, which only made him angrier. Now we're getting a sense of the mom's mind, the inner workings of her mind. So now we got three different minds that this narrator is juggling and helping us to understand together. I started to recognize this as I got older. So now there's a developmental difference here, understanding that as I got older, I could start to see more of the dynamics. That adds complexity and nuance. But it was tough growing up, especially when I was in high school, because I didn't know what type of mood my dad would be in when he came home. I tried to keep the peace and try to field any potential arguments, but it felt like walking on eggshells. Now we're back to his own mental states, right? I felt like if there's a problem, they should talk about it rather than shouting about who did what wrong, who promised to clean and didn't clean, things like that. I remember when I was older, I was trying to tell them, "You're going nowhere doing this." They're doing the very same thing over and over again. What sucks is that I don't even know if they recognize how they're impacting each other and how it's impacted me over the years. Now we're understanding impact. What are the impacts to the various characters? I certainly do. I understand that we all react to things differently and influence each other in different ways. So now you have different, it's, I mean, if you want to introduced the idea of theory of mind. This person, the narrator, has an understanding of the difference in theories of mind of each of the characters. But it still sucks when you're in the middle of it. Understanding it helps, but I wish it were different and they would get it. To this day, I am so sensitive to people's moods. I guess that's why I'm here for therapy. So this is obviously someone who's come into therapy and is being evaluated by asking for early memories. So what's the rationale for the seven? There are three characters depicted in this narrative. However, the focus is on the daughter's understanding of the event. In other words, she's in the foreground and the parents are in the background. In these instances, focusing solely on her calm and her understanding of all characters, that is self, mother, and father, is acceptable. The daughter exhibits both understanding of herself and how her parents' fighting has impacted her. That is understanding of self and also in relation to others. She also exhibits insight regarding her parents, their interpersonal dynamic, and how it impacts their communication style. At the same time, she recognizes that they do not seem to be in a place where they notice their interactional style. Moreover, she does not feel that they are currently able to adaptively work on changing their maladaptive pattern, that is, understanding of others as well as descriptions being differentiated and integrated. For these reasons, this is coded as a seven. So those are the seven anchor points of complexity of representations of people. And if you scroll up, thank you. This is homework if you haven't read it already. For each of the eight dimensions, the authors of this coding system have created a rubric for the seven anchor points, starting with a very brief vignette for a rating of one. And then what they do is they slightly modify and add to the same story, going from anchor point one to anchor point seven. So you have the same story, but then the authors are adding and revising it so that you can see how the same story can have a rating of one or a rating of seven, depending upon where the story goes and how much complexity is added to the story. So what I would recommend is that you review that section of the chapter. They call it building calm from a score of one to seven. So they're building on this fragment, which would be a score of one. They're building on it and making it more increasingly complex and differentiated until we get to a score of seven. And that it's nice because, and they do this with all eight dimensions, it's really nice because you get to see how the same story could be rated differently based on how the narrator might add to it or change it in different ways. Any questions? Just speak out. I can't see any. I see a few of you, but I don't have the whole everybody on my screen, but just speak out if you have any questions. Brian, do you want to add anything?
Just don't be afraid to make mistakes. There's no point, you know, perfect rating here. Like, we're looking for, I think they said 0.6. We usually go for 0.7 for reliability. So just try your best, and if you make your mistakes, it's good to make them in practice. And I was the one who struggled, I think, the most when we were doing the other coding system. So, like I said, it's not the end of the world if you don't get it right away, but I am here and Dr. Goodman is here if you have any questions for this homework assignment.
Yeah, and Brian is less imposing than I am, so he's open to answering questions too. Now, what I just want to prepare people, so what I'm going to do is I am going to send out everybody's correlations, and I can say this, but it's still going to generate maybe some embarrassment. But what I want to really emphasize here is that there's nothing to be embarrassed about or ashamed about. We're all learning this system together. And you know, you will get the hang of it over time. I just think it's going to take us some time to do that. But, you know, do the best you can. And I'll have correlations for everybody, and I'll have everybody's ratings, and we can talk about them then. So next week, yes, thank you, Jeremy, for being honest about that. Outside the triangle. So what we're going to do next week is we're going to spend half the time reviewing people's ratings on these 10 practice. And then we're going to spend the other half the time, and I'm going to introduce you to the AFF, the affective quality of representation. So I'll talk about that next week. So your assignment is to do the ratings, send them to me on Wednesday night by 10 p.m., and then also read the AFF chapter that I sent you yesterday. All right, so that shouldn't take terribly long. I wouldn't think it's more than an hour of time altogether, including the reading. So any final questions before we end? All right, I'm excited for the semester. I hope you guys enjoyed the lab today, and I hope you're learning something. And I'm sure this is going to help you as you work with patients and be thinking about people's, you know, your patient's quality of object relations. And it's going to be very helpful to you as you think about, especially if you're doing psychodynamic therapy, when you're doing psychodynamic therapy next year, if you're a first year, having this information in your mind is going to be really extremely helpful, I think. All right. All right, for those of you celebrating, have a happy holiday, and I will see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
See you next week.
Bye-bye.